Today, what's behind Donald Trump's law and order strategy, and will it work? With just 2 months to go until the presidential election, Donald Trump is determined to make this race about safety. Not from the virus that is still raging across America, but from violence on the streets, which he is blaming on Democrats.
To stop the political violence, we must also confront the radical ideology that includes this violence. Reckless far-left politicians continue to push the destructive message that our nation and our law enforcement are oppressive or racist. They'll throw out any word that comes to them.
The president made the comments in Kenosha, Wisconsin, where protests have flared up ever since a black man was shot and paralyzed by police. Trump suggested fears about police brutality were a fiction as he threw his weight behind law enforcement in a strategy that critics say uses coded language to play on racist fears. A strategy that Joe Biden has been responding to this week with a speech and a visit to the same Midwestern town. From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, will Trump's law and order gamble pay off? A warning to listeners, this episode contains descriptions of violence. David Smith, your job is to cover politics in Washington, D.C., and this year, it's all about the election campaign. Earlier this summer, it felt as if COVID had turned into a particularly acute disaster for the American people, and therefore Donald Trump.
So without a doubt, this is the pandemic election, and you have an incumbent president, and his handling of the pandemic is going to be issue number one, issue number two, and issue number three.
There was also a real surge in support for Black Lives Matter.
Majority of Americans support the Black Lives Matter movement by a 28% margin, up from a 17%.
All of which gave Joe Biden a firm lead in the polls. But in July, as we reported on Today in Focus, protests were still continuing in parts of the US, including Portland, and Trump saw it as a political opportunity.
I think a lot of people are looking at what's happening to these Democrat-run cities and they're disgusted. They see what's going on and they can't believe this is taking place in our country. I can't believe it either.
What has happened since then?
Yes, the Black Lives Matter protests continue in many cities, and they are mostly peaceful. But quite early on, Trump saw an opportunity politically in these protests to really push a kind of law and order narrative.
I will fight to protect you. I am your president of law and order.
The idea that he would be a strong man who would crack down on protests when they turned violent, combat vandalism, bring order to the streets and so on. And you know, on the 1st of June, his security forces cleared away peaceful protesters outside the White House so Trump could stage a photo op standing with a Bible.
Protesters facing off against authorities, kneeling and raising their hands in peaceful demonstration. And as police move in, they fire tear gas on the crowd. While inside the grounds of the White House, a remarkable split screen, the president claiming to be an ally of peaceful protesters.
Outside a historic church. For a long time, that did not seem to gain much traction. But in recent weeks, we've seen unrest, particularly in Kenosha, Wisconsin, and Portland, Oregon, including fatalities and including a lot of TV images of burning cars and buildings. And Trump has really re-emphasized his law and order approach. And I think there is a sense among some, and some indications in polling that bears it out, that finally this narrative is gaining some traction, and that perhaps Democrats have not done quite enough to condemn violence when it happens. And Trump is going to seek to exploit that.
And in some ways, it feels like the incidents that we've seen this year are continually symbolic, but particularly so in Kenosha.
Yeah, Kenosha, a city in the very crucial swing state of Wisconsin. And this has really been a tale of two videos. one Sunday afternoon, a white Kenosha police officer fired 7 shots at point-blank range into the back of Jacob Blake, a 29-year-old African-American man, as he was trying to get into his SUV. There's still an investigation into the circumstances leading up to the shooting of Jacob Blake. The attorney general in Wisconsin has said police were called to an address after a woman reported her boyfriend was present and was not supposed to be on the premises.
During the incident, officers attempted to arrest Jacob S. Blake, age 29. Law enforcement deployed a taser to attempt to stop Mr. Blake, but the taser was not successful in stopping him. Mr. Blake walked around his vehicle, opened the driver's side door, and leaned forward. While holding on to Mr. Blake's shirt, Officer Rustin Shesky fired his service weapon 7 times. Officer Shesky fired the weapon into Mr. Blake's back.
No other officer. The police have claimed Blake had a knife, although you can't see that in the video. Blake was taken to hospital, paralyzed from the waist down, still alive so far. His family have been very sharply critical of both the police and Trump, whom they've described as a racist, and they have no desire to meet him.
And his kids were in that car, weren't they?
That's right, yeah. His children, young children, witnessed this incident. But the other video in this story, I think many people say, is evidence of just the racial disparity in America, because this featured Kyle Rittenhouse, a white 17-year-old who incidentally been spotted attending at least one Trump rally earlier this year. He's from neighboring Illinois, but he went to Kenosha apparently to play vigilante during the unrest that followed the shooting of Jacob Blake. And he now is accused of shooting 3 people, 2 of them fatally. And in the video, you can see him confronted by protesters and at least one of them trying to disarm him. But he is the one with a significant weapon, and it may be difficult to make the case that he was purely acting in self-defense. In the video, you see him walking with a rifle over his shoulder, raising his arms as if surrendering to police. You can hear witnesses shouting, "Hey, he just shot them!
Hey, he just shot them! Hey, dude right here just shot them!"
And yet he walks by the police untouched, unarrested. A very different response from the police to what Jacob Blake received. An extraordinarily Rittenhouse has now been charged, and at the White House, Donald Trump this week declined to condemn him in any way.
Are you going to condemn the actions of vigilantes like Kyle Rittenhouse?
We're looking at all of it. That was an interesting situation. You saw the same tape as I saw. And he was trying to get away from them, I guess, it looks like. And he fell. And then they very violently attacked him. And it was something that we're looking at right now, and it's under investigation. But I guess he was in very big trouble. He probably would have been killed. But
it's under prompted widespread outrage. It was really seen as yet another sign that Trump will do anything for his supporters, whatever their behavior, in his determination to create an us versus them dynamic in this election.
And what did Donald Trump have to say about Jacob Blake being shot in his back in front of his children?
He said very little about that so far. He's talked about trying to contact Blake's family and not being successful. But we've seen such a pattern time and time again. Trump is determined to be pro-police and take the side of law enforcement and occasionally give tacit condemnation of these acts, but very much putting himself on the side of what he calls Blue Lives Matter as opposed to Black Lives Matter. Blue as in the police, wearing blue. And this has become a popular counter phrase, if you like. I suppose it's not dissimilar to the notion that all lives matter, as trying to undercut the message of racial injustice.
So Trump defends one of them and does absolutely nothing with the other. Why?
Trump appears to be running a re-election campaign that is all about dividing America between red Republican states and blue Democratic states, and appealing to his very fervent base with a message of law and order, echoing Richard Nixon as a presidential candidate in 1968.
It is time for an honest look at the problem of order in the United States. Let us recognize that the first civil right of every American is to be free from domestic violence. So I pledge to you, we shall have order in the United States.
I think he realized he's sending a signal to his allies, including, very importantly, conservative media, that if you're for Trump, you will get his patronage and his support in all kinds of situations. And of course, we've seen that also with the way he's given pardons and commuted sentences to his allies who've fallen foul of the law.
We talked about this strategy earlier in the summer with regards to Portland, and it felt then that it wasn't really landing, as if it was too heavy-handed. It feels as if something has changed. Is that fair?
That's a difficult question, and I think we all need some humility in gauging exactly what's going on across a huge country with an incredibly uncertain election with so many unknown unknowns. Certainly, there is some polling to suggest maybe a 10 or 15 point decline for support in Black Lives Matter.
10 or 15 points?
Indeed. And that could be fatigue. It could be some of the pictures of violence cutting through. It could also be a sense that in some cities, at least, potentially including Kenosha and Portland, the nature of these protests has changed. They've been perhaps hijacked by white people from both extremes. There is a concern about the cause being lost in that static. On the other hand, a few days ago, there was a major civil rights demonstration at the Lincoln Memorial in Washington on the anniversary of Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech there that included Jacob Blake's family and others.
Jacob Blake! There are two systems of justice in the United States. There's a white system and there's a black system. The black system ain't doing so well. But we're gonna stand up. Every black person in the United States is gonna stand up. We're tired. I'm tired.
And that was a reassertion of what all this is about and why Democrats continue to push the racial justice cause. But certainly it is all getting quite messy and confusing. And I think Trump senses at least some of the images of violence may give him a pathway to just scaring people in the suburbs and bringing them over to his side.
In some ways, then, isn't what's happening in Kenosha really helpful to Donald Trump?
It seems to be well-timed for his message, yes. Democrats are pushing back hard against that message. They're pointing out all this is happening on Donald Trump's watch.
Fires are burning and we have a president who fans the flames rather than fighting the flames. He can't stop the violence because for years he's fomented it. You know, he may believe mouthing the words law and order makes him strong. But his failure to call on his own supporters to stop acting as an armed militia in this country shows how weak he is.
He is the president, so surely the buck stops with him.
Does anyone believe there'll be less violence in America if Donald Trump is reelected? We need justice.
And that's a crucial difference from 1968, for example, when Nixon pushing this message was the challenger promising to sort it out. This time, Trump is the incumbent, and certainly the irony has not been lost on many commentators that he spoke of law and order chaos in 2016, and his inaugural address, he famously used the phrase American carnage, and now they would say he is the one who's delivered American carnage.
Donald Trump does have a bit of a track record of saying outrageous things at inappropriate times. In a way, the comments we've heard in the last couple of weeks aren't anything new. So is this a concerted strategy, or is it just Trump being Trump?
That's like the billion-dollar question, I think, about the Trump presidency.
And I know you can answer it, David.
How much of all of this is a genius playing 3D chess in the dark, a master strategy, and how much is him just shooting from the hip from pure instinct? And that's a question been asked for 5 years, really. Generally, I tend to lean towards the latter view, that he just blurts out what's on his mind, and sometimes he gets lucky that it gains traction. I think he genuinely believes some of the stuff about cracking down on agitators and so on. But the people around him and the Trump campaign perhaps are being a bit more strategic about it, and the Republican convention recently pushed all this message hard. I think they realize now this is their best shot at deflecting attention from Trump's mishandling of the coronavirus pandemic, also deflecting attention from Trump's apparent attempts to subvert democracy by sabotaging the post office to make mail-in voting more difficult and so on. For as long as we're all talking about unrest and law and order, that's what Trump does best, distract and deflect. So right now the debate is taking place on his terms.
Coming up, will Richard Nixon's playbook work for Donald Trump in 2020? David, you mentioned 1968, and that is an election in which people would say Nixon won over suburban white voters by making them nervous about violence in diverse cities. To what extent is law and order code for anti-black racism?
Oh, I think it definitely is. Trump has, as ever with Trump, he's never subtle. It's never sleight of hand or secretive. I mean, he quite openly talks about the silent majority, which was Nixon's phrase. And in recent weeks, Trump has talked and tweeted a lot about the ideal of American suburbia and how he overturned an Obama law that allowed low-income housing to move in, which again is code, I think, for racial diversity. He talks about suburban housewives. I mean, as ever, he's trapped in the 1950s vision of America with the apron strings and picket fences and so on. He's really holding up the suburbs as this prelapsarian place that Democrats want to destroy. Race is at the very heart of it, and he's making a big bet that there are still enough white suburbs out there that don't want, quote, the other, quote, moving in.
Although you'd like to think that American society in 2020 is somewhat different to 1968. I guess, regardless of whether Trump is exaggerating or lying even, the polls are shifting. So are the betting odds. The other day I got an email saying Trump and Biden were now neck and neck in the race. It feels a long way from the situation even just a few weeks ago. How is Biden responding to this?
Yes, I think everyone knew the polls were going to tighten, and they certainly appear to have done so. Biden is accused by Trump and others of perhaps being a little too passive about campaigning from his basement due to the pandemic lockdown, not getting out and about enough and engaging with the public. So he's said he will do that, probably more travel to those crucial swing states that will decide the Electoral College. He, I think, was stung by some of this law and order narrative. He gave a punchy speech in response.
We're facing multiple crises. Crises under Donald Trump have kept multiplying. COVID, economic devastation, unwarranted police violence, emboldened white nationalists, common thread, the incumbent president who makes things worse, not better.
And he asked, do I really look like a sympathizer of the the radical left and rioters.
You know me. You know my heart. You know my story, my family story. Ask yourself, do I look like a radical socialist with a soft spot for rioters? Really?
He said, if the question is who's going to keep you safe, then is it really Donald Trump, who's had more than 180,000 people die on his watch with the virus and who's overseen an economy now in ruins? I think he's trying to up his game and become more aggressive, and there's a constant barrage of press releases and tweets that come out. But Democrats worry that he's 77 years old. He doesn't have the flair and charisma of a Bill Clinton or Barack Obama. And as ever, he is up against an incumbent who has all the advantages of the White House at his disposal.
Can you explain why it is such an abuse of power for the president to stand in front of the White House and accept the nomination by his party for president again?
You shouldn't be able to perpetuate yourself in office by misusing federal employees, federal money, federal buildings, federal properties to help your campaign.
But if we look back to Biden's convention speech, which is obviously very, very different to Trump's, the Democrats had an online convention in which he wasn't speaking to a crowd in the same way. His speech was well received, and the idea of Trump failing over COVID was something people were talking about. Is it a sign of weakness that just a few weeks later, he's being pulled into Trump's narrative? I mean, it's interesting. You mentioned his line, do I look like a radical socialist? The very fact that he's had to engage with that argument suggests a weakness, doesn't it?
Yeah, the first rule of public relations is don't repeat the allegation against you. Do I look like a radical socialist? You're kind of giving voice to Trump's bogus charge. I think look, Democrats made their convention about the coronavirus pandemic and Trump's failing on it. Republicans tried to make theirs much more about law and order and give the impression the pandemic is in the rearview mirror. And coming out of them, Republicans have more momentum. I remember in the 2016 election, Hillary Clinton was caught in this trap where reporters would follow her around. And I remember being among them once or twice. And instead of whatever she was doing and whatever her campaign agenda was, she was constantly asked about the latest Trump outrage. You know, can you believe he's done this? Can you believe he's done that? That was even before Trump was president. Now he has the advantages of incumbency. It's even harder to escape Trump's narrative. But I think Trump has got lucky, at least for now, because the coronavirus pandemic, the rate of death has tailed off a bit. The rate of infections is slowing. Frankly, an invisible pathogen is less telegenic than scenes of burning buildings and cars in American cities. So the TV cameras are covering law and order. Trump is a master TV manipulator, and Biden kind of has to follow. But the other thing we know about this election news cycle and the Trump news cycle is that a week or two from now, we may be talking about something completely different again. There's a very fast turnover rate. This may or may not turn out to be a law and order election.
To some extent, it feels as if Trump will stop at nothing. He is ready to attack Biden in any way that he can. This week, he even suggested that people that are in the dark shadows, people you haven't heard of, are pulling the strings for Joe Biden.
I don't even like to mention Biden because he's not controlling anything.
Who do you think is pulling Biden's strings? Is it former Obama officials?
People that you've never heard of. People that are in the dark shadows, people that...
Oh, what does that mean? That sounds like conspiracy theory, dark shadows.
No, and people that you haven't heard of. They're people that are...
Michelle Obama once said, when they go low, we go high. But is there a sense that to have any chance of winning this fight, Joe Biden might have to change the way he campaigns, might need to go low and meet Trump head to head on this?
There is certainly a sense Biden can't go in blindfolded, particularly to the three presidential debates that are coming up. I think he should not be written off. He's been in politics for nearly half a century. He can be pugnacious. The perception of him is someone with working class roots in Scranton, Pennsylvania, someone who's sometimes a straight talker, and that includes gaffes. He can be a little rough around the edges. And that kind of authenticity, I think, will stand him in good stead. And it all makes for a very volatile mix.
I'm not sure I can take the emotional roller coaster. David Smith, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was David Smith. You can follow his reporting and that of the rest of the Guardian US team at theguardian.com. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Mithili Rao, sound design by Axel Cucoutier, the executive producers are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. I hope you have a really great weekend. We'll be back on Monday.